Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. The age of heroes has dawned and the quest for optimal wellness continues. Today on Herculean Physique, I'm proud to bring you Richard Hamilton Gibbs, author of The Mount Olympus Lifestyle. Greetings and welcome, Richard. How are you? It's been quite a while.
Yes, I'm actually just excellent. I have no complaints. And how are you?
I'm doing great. I've had many adventures culinarily and dietarily in the year or so since we last spoke. But after trying all these different things, I've settled on a ketogenic type of diet. So I thought it would be great to revisit the Mount Olympus lifestyle.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, when I first published the book, I was sort of thinking, I'm going to be building on this in the future.
Uh-huh.
And so why the Mount Olympus lifestyle? It's because what most people now realize is that we are heading to a life, not immortality so much as indefinite existence, living indefinitely. What could kill us? Accidents, murder. But when it comes down to it, we are about to see the first reversal technology that reverses old age. Now, it's going to begin, and I've sort of predicted this to people, that it's going to happen sometime before 2027, right? The first of these therapies is going to appear within 5 years, okay?
Now, right around the corner.
Yes, exactly. The thing is, the key is, Ray Kurzweil wrote a book, no, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. He's a head philosopher at Google, and one of the great thinkers in America, and his book, Live Long Enough to Live Forever, was kind of a nice catchy title. And he was sort of thinking, well, we're going to have nanobots that clean our blood and all this other stuff. Now, the human engine is the most astonishing engine already. To think that we can come up with better systems, why not tune up the ones we have? You know? Now, it does mean that we have to do something about how we eat, how we exercise, how we sleep. And the overarching thing that's the umbrella over all of this is how we stress ourselves out.
Mm-hmm.
And the game is, if you're going to change your diet, it's not allowed to be more stressful. It has to be more delicious and more fun to eat than your old diet. And all your diet transitions. So tell me about what you've done with your dietary transition.
Well, basically, when I was when we first talked, I had gone back on the Atkins type of diet, which is high protein, high fat, low carbs. And I was on the first phase, so my carb count was under 20 a day. And I ran out of a variety of things to eat fairly quickly. So I was eating right according to the diet, but it wasn't enjoyable. So I came across your book at the time. You introduced ways of making it enjoyable. So I tried the Mount Olympus lifestyle. Where I had difficulty with that was in the amount of fiber through the psyllium husk. And also, I had some difficulty with sweets. My body reacted as if they were like unhealthy sweets, which sometimes happens in diabetes type 2, which I have. So those were the two areas I had difficulty with. From there, I went to the Mediterranean diet. After a while on that, my physician recommended I eat more yogurt and more cereal, which I thought was a bad idea. And it turned out to be an extremely bad idea. My blood sugar went through the roof. So then I started back on the Atkins phase one and brought down my blood sugar substantially. So I've kind of come full circle since we last spoke, and I'm going to tap into your wisdom to see if you have any suggestions for me.
Well, people are terrified of fats. And one of the things that I went to a lot of trouble in the book was to try and explain the difference between the carbohydrate-burning animal and the fat-burning animal. Carbohydrates in the trees or around us growing grains, etc., in the summer, they're part of the fruiting process. And they're loaded with carbohydrates because that's what animals eat to get fatter.
Right.
And if you want to get through, when you want to get through winter, then you eat carbs. And now we live in a, and because they're only in the trees for 4 to 6 weeks a year, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got to put your weight on as fast as you possibly can in that 6 weeks, because most common cause of death back in the day was hunger, running out of food. And so the winter warrior is a fat burner. When people are burning fats, their IQ goes up. Their brains heal. There's a whole field of science called neurogenesis that didn't exist before the year 2000. It's a brand new area of science. The research got started in 2000. And that's because of Professor Rakic, R-A-K-I-C, had said in 1975 that the human brain cannot grow new neurons. And after 25 years, in the year 2000, he relented and said, finally, maybe it can. In that 25 years, there were neurologists who came up with pretty amazing, interesting ideas and proof that we probably grow new neurons. But Rakic drove them out of the field. I mean, all his followers are very political, and it's like, you guys are gone. In the pharmaceutical industry, they help out if people aren't towing the line. Yeah, they drive them out, which is why it's such terrible care for diabetics. You know, I mean, if you can get on a ketogenic diet, over 95% of diabetics actually stop, or type 2 diabetics stop being diabetic. And it's even great for type 1 diabetics.
Yes, because that's very true. And last time I was on this diet for a very long period of time, I reversed my diabetes altogether. So I was off medicine and everything. And then as years passed, I guess I slipped into that habit again. And so the cycle begins anew.
Yeah. And it all comes back to haunt us. Yeah. So the thing is that when I wrote the book, right, the reason for the title is that somewhere in the future, this age reversal thing is going to be possible. It's not going to be for everybody, okay? If you can't manage your lifestyle and your diet, then it's going to be 100 years before, it's going to be a long time. Anybody who's sort of, 20, 30 now is not going to see, their 200th birthday unless they actively participate in their lifestyle to get healthier and keep healthier. And so this stress thing is really the biggest one of all. People live with amazing stress levels, elective stress levels. They choose their stress levels. And people say, well, I've got to have a house to live in. If push comes to shove and you're living on Social Security, then if you get yourself fit enough and healthy enough, you can sleep in your car. You can travel wherever you want. You'll have $1,600 a month to spend. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The point is that you cannot pay rent and buy food and pay for medical care and pay for gas for a car and live an American lifestyle, living on Social Security. You know, that people are going to have to really make decisions about how they choose their lifestyle. Yeah? And it's got to be affordable, because if it doesn't fit in their income horizon, then you can't just keep adding more debt via credit cards. And this is where a lot of people are going wrong at the moment. But, you know, stress reduction, people who stress me out, I remove them from their life, from my life. It's not their life. I let them live. But I don't have to live with stressful people or be friends with stressful people. And the older I get, because now I'm 73, 74
wow.
in December. But I'm in amazing shape. You know, I go down to the gym, I get on a cross trainer. If I'm watching a good movie, I'll be there for an hour and a half. Yeah? And I lift weights. I have people walking up to me and saying, how old are you? Because my body just doesn't look old. Yeah.
Well, you don't look old either.
Yeah.
I've seen old pictures and newer pictures on your Facebook page, and you look remarkably young. And it's very difficult to guess your age by looking at you.
Well, I have a Tanita scale, TANITA, and this particular Tanita scale model actually measures your weight, bone density, percentage water, percentage body fat, and right at the end it says this is your chronological age, and it tells me I'm 33, right? now I'm not looking at that as a vanity, and I know it sounds like I'm boasting, but the thing is that people who are really practicing healthy lifestyle and not doing it with steroids and lots of metabolic assists, you know, it's like if you do it by keeping your diet high fat, moderate protein, low carbohydrate. Now, the other thing that's really important, this relates to stress, is one day a week, take the day off and be carbohydrate aware. And if you want to make it 2 days a week, if you're down to low body fat percentage, you've got a body that can soak up carbohydrates without doing any damage. Yeah? And so if you're in real killer condition, taking vacation for 2 days a week eating carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can have French fries. You know, go to a really good burger joint. If you're going to eat a burger, don't eat garbage. Eat something that's totally delicious, right? And if you're going to eat carbs, try to get them in earlier in the day and get a workout in, an exercise trip. I mean, I meet a lot of people at the gym, yeah?
Uh-huh.
Just because I smile and I'm friendly and, you know, there's a lot of nice people out there. And they need a smile and a little sort of, you know, cuddle from a distance. It's just a little bit of, yeah. I mean, I was in a shoe store. No, I wasn't. I was in a Ross store the other day. And there was this woman. She was looking like a single mom. And a boy comes running over to her and says, Mom, this pair of shoes, it's only $20. Ah, he was totally taken with these shoes, right? And she was looking like, oh, God, one more thing. So I walked over to her and I said, here's $20. You pay the sales tax. And I just walked away.
Uh-huh.
I'm sort of like further down shopping. And the boy comes and finds me. And he says, thank you. You know, see, how much effort does it take to change people's lives? Just start looking at the people around you. And start giving back a little more. It doesn't have to be a whole lot. People get more out of a little bit of encouragement, you know, I walk up to boys in the gym because they get bad. Nobody ever tells them they look great. Yep. And I see them working away and working away. I've been there for a few days and they're there every day. And, you know, nobody is giving them credit. And I just walk over and say to them, you're looking great, right? You're doing what you're doing just right. Keep it up because it's really working, right? And they smile from ear to ear. If I weighed 300 pounds, I couldn't do that. You know, if I didn't sort of look like somebody who cares about their lifestyle, their life, how they look after themselves. And, you know, the little thing I always tell people is, look, you've got one gift that you have from the moment you're born until you die. It's your body. Now, if you believe in God, and you say this is a gift from God, and you're not looking after that gift from God like it came from God, if you're not keeping it every day, nurturing, looking after it, you know, it's like you're not respecting the gift that you were given. And I think that that's really, it's important to be humble, you know? And I mean, it's like you can't, if you're at the gym because you're busy looking in the mirror, you're not focusing, you're not looking, you've got to look inwards. We grow up, but we don't grow down. We don't find our roots. We don't discover who we are. And most people on their deathbed, they'll tell you, the great regrets they have are the things they never did.
Right.
The things they never achieved that they could have done. And it's like, God, if I had it over again, I would have done this. I would have walked up to Peggy Sue and said, you are the best looking girl and I want to marry you. It's like they would have stepped forward. They would have done things differently. And so everybody should look at their life and say, what are the things I'm leaving undone? What are the things that when I'm dying, I would say to myself, boy, I wish I'd done that. I wish I'd done that. I had the chance to do that and I never did. Yeah.
I worked with terminal ill people for years when I was younger. And so I learned that lesson very early. I worked with people who were never leaving the bed that they were in. And if they were lucid, I discovered that regrets are the worst thing that you can have. And like you say, it's little things mostly, not I wish I had pursued my career further, or I wish I'd stayed later at work and earned more money. But, you know, things, not having said something to somebody they would like to let them know how they feel, not going somewhere, not doing something that they had the opportunity to do, but they were afraid of doing because of what other people would say or something like that. Those were regrets that eat at you at the end of life. And the best treasure a person could have is memories, good memories to share. And also, if somebody cared enough about you, even if they were a paid worker, to come visit you every day and spend some time with you, that too was a treasure beyond price. So it helped me see my life in a totally different way. I never forgot that lesson. And now you're eloquently expressing that. So it seems you've learned that too as well.
I think because, I mean, you have to have near-death experiences. Well, that's what it took for me, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, 1996, I was 47. I was running a global company that I built from startup, 18 years. And I was told, your life expectancy is 18 months. I stopped. I retired. Bam. That was it. 18 years. And because my new objective was to save my life, right? Mm-hmm. I had friends, I still have friends who are right at the leading edge of metabolic science, which is why I'm here today. 4 years ago, I went in the hospital with necrotizing pneumonia. It kills 70% of the 30-year-olds who get it. And it's like I was in the ICU for 4 days, pipes and tubes in my lungs, and a death door. One of my metabolic science friends. He's the Mozart of biotech. He came to Roseville, where I was, and my ICU doctor had his medical degree. He also had a degree in microbiology. And so my friend outlined a very different approach. And eyes wide open, the ICU doctor said, that makes perfect sense. They did that. So 4 days later, I went into the hospital. I couldn't walk for 3.5 weeks. They told me, you're going to be in a wheelchair, possibly for the rest of your life, so you need to get used to these ideas. And you're definitely going to be using a walker, right?
Mm-hmm.
And 3 days before I was going to get out of rehab, because they kick you out for a certain amount of time. Doesn't matter what shape you're in, you're leaving because the government's not paying anymore for you old people. Right? 3 days before, I was actually walking very carefully, unassisted. And 2 days before, I started walking around the hospital, the entire perimeter of the buildings. And I was doing that and stop and then do another lap and then stop and doing another lap. And so by the time I left rehab, I was actually able to walk up and downstairs. And I mean, they were absolutely amazed. Physical therapists aren't allowed to tell you if you're doing good or if you're doing bad, because if they tell you you're doing good, that means you might slack off and get lazy. And if they tell you you're doing bad, you might get depressed and kill yourself. So they were saying nothing, but I could see these guys they were just bursting to say something to me, which killed me. It's like, but I, you know, the thing is that I'm back. I went through that experience. And what it told me is I had 600 square foot of storage that was full of stuff that I had when I sold my house with 4,300 square feet. You know, I just put everything in storage, and I had 600 square feet of storage I was paying for every month. And I thought, you know, I haven't been to that storage space for years. I had paintings, sculpture, all kinds of crap in there, computers, golf clubs. It's like, I just said to the people who own the storage space, just get rid of it, right? Just do whatever you want with it. There's nothing in there that is going to make my life any better than it is now. I'm alive. Because had I died, it would have been no use to me. And suddenly I'm not paying that huge storage bill every month. Wow.
Wow.
I mean, it's like, and people look at that and go, oh my God, because they remember the house and they remember the furniture I had and the sound systems and all sorts of other things I had, because it was 4,300 square foot of house. It's a lot of house.
Yes,
and
is.
The fact that I just said, it's gone. And you know, and the point is, see, if I live for 1,000 years, why will I need that stuff, that particular stuff, right? Get your focus on living for 1,000 years and realize that the couch you have and the car you're driving, and if these are expensive things that are eating their heads off and keeping you on a treadmill of having to make it, crack a certain nut every year in the way of money, it's like, you know, it's time to start thinking about living 1,000 years. See, imagine, I mean, in the past, everybody has said, well, I'm going to die. I'm going to, you know, go to school, go to college, my early 20s or mid-20s, I'm going to go out to work, I'm going to build a career, I'm going to keep doing that until I'm 60, and then I'm 65, 70, then I'm going to retire and spend 5, 10, 15, maybe 20 years retired, you know, kicking back at the country club, if you're lucky, or just existing and waiting for the end. And the point is that if you can say, it's not going to work that way, right? I am going to live my life where every day, in every way, I'm getting younger and younger. For some in the 70s, and people look at me and say, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do what you did. And I ask them, have you ever tried? Because, you know, the first step of the 1,000 miles, it's a single step that begins your journey of 1,000 miles. And your journey of 1,000 years begins with a single step. It begins with today and then tomorrow. And make today the best you can make it. And then make tomorrow the best you can make it. And think about, how can I make tomorrow so good that I remember it in 100 years?
I believe in that also, that each moment is precious and we should live life to the full capacity. And we need to live life, not think about living life. The Mount Olympus lifestyle seems to evolve since last time we talked, and you're introducing concepts that were seeded in the book, but now they've moved very far beyond. Are you planning on writing a second book?
I think I'm actually working with people who are younger, because the thing is that the people, if you can start people, if you can broaden their cognition, increase their cognitive umbrella, stretch their minds to what their future is going to hold, mm-hmm. and say, okay, the only way you're going to enjoy it is having the vehicle that you're driving every day, your body, in perfect condition. So don't worry about what you look like in a mirror, right? That's irrelevant, because what you see in the mirror is going to change, and it's going to reflect the best you as you put more and more effort into yourself. And the thing is, don't stress yourself out. Don't do stressful exercise. Don't eat crap food because it's stressful. Find out how to make delicious food. Yeah, I think that's the path. I mean, you know, work on making your lifestyle as enjoyable as you possibly can. And what people discover when they do that is it's not based on how much money you have to spend. It's based on your friends, your beliefs, your honorable nature. Are you the kind of person people look at and they say, I want to spend time with them because they don't judge me. They listen to me. You know? And I think listening is very, very important. I do a lot of listening. Yeah.
Now, in the Mount Olympus lifestyle, you also made looking for recipes an adventure with friends. And you would get together and you try all sorts of things. And that, too, is part of your philosophy for enjoying a life, because most people don't do that. And you did, and it sounds like you had a great time doing it.
Well, we did. I mean, okay, so the first person I met was Mickey. And I was looking around for somewhere to live, and he was somebody I ran into, and he looked at me and he said, you're in amazing shape. And I said, yeah. He said, when do you eat? And I said, I have a ketogenic diet and been living that way for, at that stage, I don't know, quite a few years. And, you know, exercising, doing all the good things to try and stay alive. And he said, what do you have for breakfast? And I said, bacon and eggs. And he looked at me, and he didn't say anything for about a minute. And then he says, I love bacon. And then he started talking. He said, well, he weighed 220 pounds at the age of 12. You know, I mean, he wasn't tall. He was just round. And his whole family was fat. And he said, I started when I was 12, I started exercising and doing pull-up. You know, he said, the day that I managed to do my first pull-up was a day I'll remember for the rest of my life. You know, it's like his and he had gone through so many diets. When I met him, he'd been on a raw vegan diet for 14 months. Raw vegan, you can't even use coconut oil because it's been processed by squeezing the oil out of the coconut husk. And it's like everything has to be. So he was eating about 40 pounds of bananas a week. He was going out running. He felt terrible. He was always exhausted. And I gave him, I spent about 3 hours just running down this stuff. And the next day, he started eating bacon and eggs, and he called me to, I feel wonderful. So he just stayed in touch and kept, you know, picking my brain. And I just said, oh, I'm never doing this again. I'm gonna write it all down in the book because I never want to go through this stuff. And I'll keep it as simple as I can because this is how to get people started. Because once they get started, they feel much, much better.
Your book, you keep it very simple, like you say. There's exactly what tools you'll need to create the food different suggestions on where you can get the stuff at a dollar store or Target, like inexpensively, rather than a gourmet shop. And your instructions are very easy to follow for all the recipes.
Well, the layout of the recipes on one side at the top, it says, here's the utensils you need. On the other side, here are all the ingredients you're going to need. And what you do, you learn kitchen technique. You get all the utensils out and you put them on one side of the counter, and you get all of the food you're going, all of the ingredients you're going to need, you put them on the other side of the counter. And so you've got the bowls, the mixers, everything else that you need is there. So you can start and you never need to move. And so much of cooking, being a great cook, is about time and motion. It's if you stop and you race over and you've got to get something else or find something else in the cabinet and stop. If you leave something sitting for too long, and it might be moments, a minute, you know, then the recipe will not come out as well as if you have really good kitchen technique. And it's stress-free. It's the most stress-free way to cook. And you get terrific results. And you make very little mess that way as well, you know. People who have no kitchen technique, the mess they leave behind them when they cook is just, you know, like a nuclear bomb hit. And so I taught these boys, well, it started with Mickey, and then Tia. I ran to him at the gym, and he was one of these people. I walked over and said, you look absolutely amazing. He definitely was the best looking boy in the gym, yeah, no doubt. And he was in there every day. And the thing that's crazy is you think, what a great looking boy. He's got all kinds of things going on in his life. He was working as a truck mechanic, you know, big trucks. I mean, he was earning about 40 bucks an hour. But when it came down to who did he have around as friends to get out with and things like that, he's only 20 years old. He couldn't go to any of the social gathering places. So I said that to him. Then he seen me snacking in the gym, and what I was eating was peanut butter and coconut oil mixed together 50-50, because there's your high-fat, high-energy substrate, right? Give that to people working out. 20 minutes later, they're on fire again. And he said, what are you eating? And I told him, yeah. I said, do you like peanut butter? He said, yeah. I said, mix some up. I gave him a taste. He said, that tastes great. So he got on to that. And about 3 weeks later, he says, Mitch, you got any other recipes? That's getting pretty boring because he was eating it all the time. And his idea of food was Subway. So, Tigger finished up sort of joining the band. And then Logan ran into him in a gym as well. And so the four of us would get together and do potlucks on Sunday. Now, Tigger was really difficult because I gave him the nickname Tigger because when I first met him, it's like he hated everything. He hated mayonnaise. He hated tomatoes. Unless they were on a pizza, you know, as the potato, the tomato sauce on a pizza. But I mean, so, you know, there's things, foods he liked. He didn't like tomatoes sliced and or cooked or anything else. If it was on a pizza, fine. So I had this thing about, well, what can I do to get to the food? And so a whole lot of the recipes in the book, the things that I thought up, potluck. I mean, the chicken livers with mushrooms and onion and bacon. That was one. I cooked it up. It smells amazing. And yes. I gave some to Tia. And he's going, ew, chicken livers? Because that's like, he ate it. He had three helpings. Then make a cauliflower potato replacement, mashed cauliflower. And Tigger just took to that, and he then made it his own with just boatload of cheese, lots of grated cheese and the cauliflower. It's a kind of cauliflower cheese. It is lovely. It's definitely, but if you're going to give your kids macaroni cheese, hey, cauliflower cheese is way better for them. And it tastes delicious. So Peter was, he's now in the Air Force. Right? He's becoming a medic and loving life. And he's still wrestling and playing. He was fighting MMA when he was 13. And this boy doesn't think he's having fun unless he's got blood on him. Yeah.
Hmm.
But anyhow, he's kind of off the keto diet now because he's in his Air Force drinking and, you know, all the whole thing with the Air Force boys and just having a ball. But he knows how to do it exactly right. Yeah? If he ever needs to really get to the top of his game athletically, and he will come back to it full time. But right now, other people are cooking his food. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And, that's what life in the Air Force is like. You don't get to cook.
Wow. Yeah. So now your ideas about immortality, which are backed by science, that's a whole new adventure, and that goes way beyond what you talked about in the Mount Olympus lifestyle. And you said you're working with people who are writing about it?
No, I've been working with people who are right at the leading edge of the science. I'm privy to stuff that I can't talk about. The thing is that this is proprietary technology on their part. All I can tell you is it's coming. Right? And the thing is, I can't even prove that it's coming because I can't tell you anything about it. But what I can say is, if you do something to improve your health, reduce your stress levels, make yourself happier, because when you reduce your stress levels, you get happier. When you're on a ketogenic diet, you grow more neurons. You know, depression turns out you're short of neurons. Right? Prozac helps you grow more neurons. People always thought it was to do with serotonin. It has nothing to do with serotonin. And the thing is, I've been fascinated with this because chemistry was always my first love. Just I could never see how to make a living doing anything with chemistry. But the thing is that you know, 1998, I was telling people, if you're under 50, your life expectancy is 150. And 150, where you're downhill race skiing when you're 130, right? And people would look at me and go, you know, what are you talking about, right? But, I mean, in fact, the most common thing people said to me was, I don't want to live that long. I said, you know, the great thing for you is it's optional. You know, if you need to or if you want to, you can leave today. Yeah? So exactly when you're thinking you'd like to be dead? Yeah? Just how soon do you want to be dead? you know, 5 years, 2 years, 10 years, 20 years. Pick a time. And they realize then they only want to be dead if their life has become such a burden to them that they can no longer stand it. And so the point is, if you make yourself, get yourself fit and healthy and all that other stuff, and it starts with mindset, because if you're humble and you have the mindset, you're going to find the ways. Simple as
very,
that.
Very true.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, like I'm saying, Tigger is out there, he's partying and eating all kinds of foods, but he looks amazing because he is so active. He's got all the time in the world to play all kinds of sports and whatever in the Air Force, because he's basically in, you know, doing his training as a medic. And the rest of the time, these are a bunch of very high energy, bouncy boys. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and they just have a lot of fun together. Yeah.
So you're still working out almost daily at the gym. What are you doing? Heavy weights with low repetitions, light weights with many repetitions? Do you have any particular workout that you do?
Well, okay. I think about my whole body and what I haven't worked. I keep a logbook. I carry it around with me in the gym, and I just write down what I've done so I can look back yesterday, day before, and see what happened. I've been working, and where have I been lazy? Because, hey, everybody wants to do chest exercises. You know, I sort of lie my back and do, you know, dumbbell flies and a press, so sort of 15 uh-huh. flies, 15 press, with, like, you know, at the moment, 240s, 235s, 240s, 245s, depending on how I feel. Before I got sick, right. I was doing that with 55s, right? And people watch this little frail old man picking up 255-pound weights and then lie on the back and do flies with them. It's like, what? Yeah, it's like, yeah, kind of. It's showing off, okay? But cross-training, I take a tablet in. Take in a 10-inch tablet. You know, Netflix and Disney and all this other stuff. And watch a documentary, watch a YouTube documentary, watch whatever, and just get on that cross trainer. I don't aim to get a huge sweat going on a cross trainer because I'm not punishing myself. Mm-hmm. I'm there for reward. So, you know, I'll do 35, 45 minutes. Sometimes I'll do 15 minutes. Just depends how I feel. If I'm feeling, yeah, this is boring, I'll go and do something else. And if I'm having one of those days at the gym where I'm just not feeling it, it's like I need to go have a beer. Yeah?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so there's carbs in the beer. But, you know, like I say, if I drink beer, I'll have two beers. I don't drink a six-pack. Yeah?
Uh-huh.
And there are times when you're just feeling like you need something to pick you up. And when your body says, and you're in great shape, have a beer, right? Then have a beer. You're not living in a prison. Your body will tell you. And if it says, well, you need a beer every night, then it's you've lost the message somewhere. I have a lot of friends my age who they just look at me and they can never say, gee, you look good. Not one of them ever tells me I'm looking well. Yeah.
Why?
And you think that's amazing because they feel when they look at me, they judge themselves. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If everything in your life is about judgment and not achievement, yeah. If everything has to do with comparison with what other people are doing, and not comparison with yourself. It's like I say, you know, people don't grow down. They grow up, but they never grow down. Find their roots. Find who they really are and find out where and how to love themselves and reward themselves and integrate the one gift that was given to them at birth into their dreams and keep it in the kind of shape that when they offer it to somebody else, they say, I love you. And they offer them this gift, which is the one gift they have, you know, which is their body. Wouldn't you want somebody to offer you their body in the best possible condition that it can be in? Then you see them at their best. And the number of guys I know who look like crap, and they tell people, I love you. And it's like, they're not very lovable because they don't love themselves. Okay? They're not a gift to the person they're offering themselves to. And I look around and I see compromise everywhere, and I just ain't compromised. So I'm single, and I'm staying that way. Yeah?
Okay.
I just like, yeah. I mean, in the next 40 years, I'll find somebody. Maybe the next 60 years, 80 years, but I'm here for thousands of years. Yeah? And I'm still getting my ideas together, my head together about what is it going to take for me to live that long loving every day? Because when I don't love it anymore, then I'm going to leave. Yeah? But the way I see it is I'm probably going to keep loving this for a very, very long time.
And you said, I really enjoy my life. Not that many people aim for immortality, and you certainly are. And that's a bold goal to set, and I admire that.
It's not aim for it. What happens? What happens if it's available to you, and you don't take the option? Yeah, it's available to you, and you choose not to take the option. Talk about one of the great regrets on your deathbed. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But you could have been in perfect health. You know, I'm planning on being 29 years old for 10,000 years at least. Yeah?
And that type of...
I mean, age reversal means we're going back. I looked amazing when I was 29.
That type of goal is usually attained by people metaphysically. Life after death... reports that people are in their like early 30s and in the best condition of their life. So you're trying to bring that here and actualize it on the earth plane. And again, that is very bold.
People don't put two and two together. When I say age reversal, I mean age reversal. I'm going back to 29. And the reason I go back to 29 is because at 29, I was living in Australia at that time, and I was being stopped whenever I walked into a bar and asked for my ID, and the drinking age is 18, or was 18, and it's like they didn't really check very carefully. They didn't check ID very carefully, but at 29, I looked 17. And my biggest problem in my 20s, you know, was that I was working senior executive jobs, and nobody took me seriously. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Until they knew me and knew where I belonged in the company. Then they went, oh, shit, right? But when they first met me, because, you know, in my mid-20s, I was in the gym. Yeah. Les Mills, New Zealand Olympian. And today, in fact, all over America, you'll see Les Mills aerobic routines and things like that in gyms. His two sons took that global. But I was just a little group of us in a million people city, Auckland. There was one gym. It wasn't very big. We were a tight-knit little crew, and we really worked out. Yeah?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and so I'd like to go back to the how I looked when I was 29. Yeah, and with age reversal, God, that'd be really something to do. I think I could be a celebrity with that kind of thing. What do you think?
I think so too. And yeah. you certainly don't look your age now, so I've no doubt that if anybody can achieve that, you certainly can.
Right. Yeah. The thing is that I look at this from the Elon Musk perspective. Probability.
Uh-huh.
It's a mathematical possibility. Okay. There's a percentage likelihood what's happening every year, that percentage likelihood that it's going to happen in my lifetime is going up and up and up. And we already know so much about nutrition. Once you've done the nutrition, sometime I'll have to get on to supplement regimen, and we'll talk about that. But I think, the basics, people are missing out on their trace minerals, copper, manganese, tin, arsenic, all these, selenium, all these things are essential trace minerals. If you have no arsenic in your diet, you die. It's crazy. But the thing is that people look at this and say, too much of that will kill you, right? Not too many Big Macs will kill you too. It takes a while, whether you use Big Macs or malnutrition of any kind. But it's like, yeah. And I think I only got back in the gym earlier this year. I was so demoralized by what happened to me when I went into hospital 4 years ago. I went in, I was 175 pounds. 4 days later, I'd lost 40 pounds. And I wasn't carrying a lot of fat, I just lost 40 pounds of muscle mass. And it's very demoralizing when you're on this track to say, I'm looking after myself, I'm doing everything right, but I got necrotizing pneumonia. And apparently that is a real killer. Yep. And I'm very lucky I survived. And most of the reason I survived was because I was in such amazing shape when I got it. Yeah. So.
And that continues onwards. And you've given us an awesome book. And I remember last time we spoke, you were saying that you do private training as well of individuals. Are you still doing that?
I avoid doing that as much as possible. I just run into people in my life who are highly motivated. They really, really, they have reached that point in misery in their life where they need some kind of encouragement. To somebody needs to just step out for them. And the thing is, it's like, this is not something I can see turning into a business. I can see it becoming a movement, right? And I'm just realizing now that I need to go back to work, and I'm running into people who are very interested in collaborating in business, and with my track record in startup and business generally, it's like they look at me and say, yeah, but I'm not gonna be involved unless I can run it. Because managing a business, you have to listen to everybody else very, very, very carefully. And then you have to be incredibly creative with their suggestions. Yeah. And I haven't met anybody who can do that as well as I can. Yeah.
Another challenge.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if I'm going to live that long, it's like, yeah. It's time to stack the challenges on. Okay.
Well, I'm certainly intrigued by this new adventure, and I'm sure I can benefit from learning about the things that you're discovering. One of our hosts on Herculean Physique, his name is Michael DelRussi. He's very heavily into longevity and vitamins and lifestyle. I'm really fascinated with the subject. I definitely intend on having you back on. And not a year will pass until next time. We'll make it happen earlier than that.
Well, get him on as well, because the more ideas, the better. You know, getting more people into this conversation, because the other thing is that I find very often the people asking me questions are the best triggers of all, because then you're answering real world what people want to hear. It's like, well, how do you do this? What do you do when you wake up in the morning? How do you wake up in the morning? What do you do first thing? You know, and the other thing is that we're living in a world which is beginning to research things that it never looked at before. For example, we've now got legalized marijuana in California and various other states. And I know people who just spend their whole life stoned. I know people who microdose, you know. Then we've got all of the hallucinogens, particularly psilocybin. It's an astonishing substance what it does to people's motivation, to getting their head on straight, all sorts of other things. But it needs to be in an environment well understood and not judgmental, you know. But unfortunately, this is a police state, that in America, the police run everything, and they're looking for more things to run. We are going to have to get past that and not look at these things as recreational, but look at them as metabolic. And our brain is the one thing that really needs metabolic help.
And on that note, we have to start wrapping up our conversation. How can people locate you, Richard, and how can they get in contact with you?
Well, I don't know. I'm very hard to find at the moment because I'm just staying out under the radar.
Okay.
Every way I can. I mean, but it doesn't mean I'm not doing anything. I'm figuring out what is the most worthwhile thing to do that will contribute most to other people's lives. I mean, everybody's got this recipe for business, which is how do we get people, you know, and get repeat customers, right? My whole thing is how to create people who are so motivated, they go out and they teach other people. Think of the Christian model or Christianity, and not the go to war type Christianity, but the real, you know, the Good Samaritan, all of the things that we associate with this, and make that happen in a viral way where people understand that they're doing great things for themselves and great things for the people around them.
I
haven't figured out quite how to do that yet.
The Elysium Project. Elysium is the highest heaven that humans could imagine. And that's my goal in life, to bring forth
Elysium Fields
here and now. So it seems like we're on the same quest. Richard, I enjoyed myself a great deal. I want this conversation to continue either publicly or privately, but I'd like to continue and learn more about what you're doing. And I will arrange for you and Michael to be on the same program. And this way, you both wandered into areas that I haven't. So I'll learn a lot. Thank you so much.
Right.
And
well,
thanks,
you're very welcome. It's great to talk.
Thank
and if anybody
you.
Wants to get in touch with me, do it through you. All right?
Okay. So if anyone wants to get in contact with Richard, do it through me. And thanks for listening, everybody. Whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called in and are patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you'll check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And thanks again, Richard.
Namaste.